Hello and welcome to yet another Link here on Press TV with me, Zubin Zarvan. We're, guess what, we're discussing Israel, its actions and reactions vis-a-vis what's happening throughout the Maghreb, that is North African region in terms of revolutions, if not the broader Middle East. And to do that, we've got some people as audience joining us in Beirut as well as London. And some experts on the panel. In London, we have Osama Kashu. He's the leader of the International Solidarity Movement, or ISM. In Ontario, London, that is, Canada, we've got Edward Corrigan. Well, he is basically an international immigration lawyer. And in Gaza joining us, we've got Adi Mormick. He's a human rights activist. And finally, from New York City, we've got Thomas Lipscomb, an investigative journalist fellow at the Annenberg University. A warm welcome to everyone. Let me begin with you, Osama. I think it was a couple of weeks or maybe even days ago that the Director General of Israel's Ministry for Strategic Affairs, by the name Yossi Cooper-Wasser, said something in the lines that, it was actually a question I'd like you to answer. Are these revolutions that we're witnessing throughout the region, Middle East as well as Maghreb, democracy movements, democratization, if not modernization revolutions, or simply nationalistic ones?
Well, I think, to start with, I don't really like leaders, so I'm not a leader of the International Solidarity Movement. I'm just a member, and I was one of the founders of that movement. And this movement is an international movement which addresses revolution before anything else. And we believe that democracy is the greatest revolution ever that we witnessed. And yes, by all means, all these people who are calling for their rights to be acknowledged and for their full freedom are calling for their democracy, and their revolution is a complete right. And I don't think it's up to any Israeli officials to identify what is their movements. Is it like a democracy or a revolution? It's the people who are saying basically what they're doing, and we are seeing on the TVs.
But apart from those definitions and whether or not they have any right to define those things, let me go to Gaza and to Adi Mormick. Now, Adi, what have been the reactions, if not actions, of the Israeli camp vis-a-vis these events in the region?
They've kept very quiet. There has been a few bombings in Gaza, we felt the full effects as they should have around the Zaytun area in near the eastern Gaza Strip. I think they're waiting and they're biding their time. Some people are saying that Israel is going to strike now Gaza because it is while there's still unstable regimes, while perhaps they might be expecting people to be less friendly to them than, for example, Hosni Mubarak was, who was a massive ally with Israel and obviously a big benefactor of U.S. aid. So now that they fear in the future they might not have this ally, people are talking about them striking or doing something which could have more permanent effects on the Palestinian situation, perhaps in the West Bank, talking about transfer like Lieberman has been doing in the past. There's been no change in the siege, even from the Egyptian side as well. There has been nothing. It's still continuing 3.5 years now. It's totally illegal against, collective punishment against the Geneva Convention, Article 33.
In the internal situation in Gaza, no doubt about it, a little bit down the road. But to the people in Beirut, now, why don't you guys tell us, in your mind, do you think the Israelis are somewhat afraid, if not concerned, about what's happening throughout the region in terms of these popular uprisings, which aren't necessarily, by the way, called Islamic, but there might be indeed an Islamic component to them?
Now, what Israel afraid most, everybody knows about Israel massacres for 60 years. We don't need to speak about them a lot. Now, what Palestinian needs are, in my opinion, they don't need too much talking. They need only weapons. They need only weapons.
Are you?
I think only for $100 million.
Sir, are you suggesting more violence, or am I mistaken here? Are you alluding to the fact that in order to respond commensurately to the Israeli, actions upon the people in the occupied territories, specifically Gaza, there should be military retaliation, a forceful and vehement one?
Of course. Israel, if you are weak and you speak with Israel in a weak way, they will not respect you. If the only way for 60 years, Palestinians are like without real weapons. They need real weapons, only machine guns.
But sir, again, since you brought it up, it is indeed a very important issue. And I'm sure a lot of people in the audience, as well as experts, might want to weigh in here. Now, is weaponry the best of tools in terms of striking a healthy and constructive dialogue? Because unless you do actually have that health of a dialogue, no matter how lopsided it could be in the end of the day, there will not be any constructive outcome. There would be just, you know, this vicious cycle of violence upon violence.
Look, the Palestinians doesn't need war jet planes. They don't need submarines. They don't need nuclear bombs. Only they need, like, missiles, starting from Katyusha missiles and like a Cornet against the war tanks. Then
you're saying that they need weaponry to equip themselves and properly defend themselves against Israeli attacks. But then, is there not a better way? I'm addressing this to someone else in the audience in Beirut. Another way, a more appropriate, more acceptable, humanistic way, even effective way to respond to those Israeli attacks that do happen on a daily basis on the people in the occupied territories, specifically in Gaza?
Definitely not, because Israel, the only way for them to understand is by violence. Well, violence, not violence really, is just to defend ourselves, because the say of what's taken by power, it has to be brought back by power. See, Israel has been systematically killing, ethnically cleansing, trying to get rid of all the Palestinian in the occupied territories, and of course in the Middle East, whether it was Lebanon or maybe now in the future Egypt. So the only way for Israel to understand is by fighting it back, because there's no dialogue. What the dialogue has been happening since the Oslo, and what the Palestinian authorities has been talking to them for so many years. What happened with that? Nothing whatsoever. Israeli and the Zionists in particular, the only way to understand, for them to understand, is by firing them back. And of course, Gaza needs more weapon to fight them back, and I'm with that 100%.
To Edward Corrigan. Now, what's your perspective, being a lawyer? How legalistic an argument do you think this is for the Palestinian, those underprivileged and under constant attack and the threat by the Israeli side, to take up arms in order to defend themselves? Do you find that illegal?
Well, every people has a right to defend themselves, so certainly the Palestinians, and this is an established fact and recognized under international law. But, you know, you have to look at the realities. Israel is considered the fourth most powerful state militarily. The Palestinians can never compete with that. And the United States, as long as it doesn't change its policy, is going to make sure that Israel has a military superiority over not only the Palestinians, but all over any coalition of Arab states. And actually, Israel's talking about a $20 billion budget request from the United States next year because of the change of circumstances. Certainly what's happening in Egypt. Lebanon has stood up and defended itself very well, and has, in fact, by basically having a tie, has in effect defeated the Israeli army. But the Palestinians, I think, have to continue their peaceful that. And, you know, there's this image of that Israel is the David and somehow the Arabs are the Goliath is gone. It's clearly that the Palestinians are the disadvantaged party. They are now the Davids fighting a Goliath that is, imposing, repressive policies in the occupied territories, essentially has Gaza under a siege and starving it, which is clearly contrary to international law. I think what Israel is obsessed about is the demographic issue, where right now, according to various sources, either the Palestinians are tied with the Israelis between the Jordan and the Mediterranean, or in fact there's more Palestinians between the Jordan and Mediterranean. Therefore, they're trying to create conditions to effect to drive out the Palestinians from the West Bank, also mm-hmm. from Israel proper. So this seems to be one of the obsessions of the Israeli policymakers. But I think, you know, the reality is that the Palestinians are not going to get nuclear weapons, they're not going to get F-16s. It would be, I suppose, helpful if they had some anti-aircraft weapons or surface-to-air missiles that they could defend themselves against the helicopter attacks and the fighter attacks. But this is not going to happen.
Okay, now speaking of this, you know, potential scenario in which the Palestinians would be empowered to properly defend themselves against a more superior, militarily speaking, financially speaking, Israeli side. But until we do actually establish whether or not this is, well, possible, if not acceptable. But then let me go to the people in London and, you know, retrace the conversation a little bit to the first step where we got started. Now, do you think the Israelis are a little bit fearful of what's happening across the region? The Middle East region, broader Middle East, as well as North Africa, in terms of these democracy and liberation movements?
Well, of course, they must be afraid, because now they are afraid of Islamic Brotherhood, for example, in Egypt, taking part of the political organization, which could harm them somehow in terms of their peace treaty with Egypt. And this is the Egyptian part of it. And throughout the Middle East, of course, there is anxious and anxiety from the foes, from the Israeli and from the Middle Eastern.
Simply put it, yes, the Israelis should be concerned because they've made pact with these regimes who are, in essence, dictators. And what they've done is kind of separated the Palestinians and the surrounding countries, because these countries don't actually support their regimes. Now, as these regimes fall, the Israelis are obviously going to be concerned, yes.
Let me go to Thomas Lipscomb. Welcome to the show, Mr. Lipscomb. I don't know if you were listening to what we were discussing so far. If you were, good for you. But anyway, just answer a brief question for the starters, maybe. Do you think Israel is, or should, or even might, or would, be a little bit concerned about what's taking place throughout the region?
I think every nation state in the area is concerned about what's happening in the region. We have no idea where these things are going to go. Nobody does. I wouldn't be surprised if Morocco was concerned, Saudi Arabia was concerned, and Iran was concerned as to what's going on in the region. So, of course, the Israelis are. But the Israelis' principal issue is the treaty which the U.S. arranged between Israel and Egypt. And that would be the one thing they'd be most worried about. Will the Gaza flank open up for a free flow from Egypt again under, a Muslim Brotherhood type government? That would be a very major thing for Israel. And that would destroy the American $1.3 billion military support.
And given this prognosis of yours, do you think there is any reason why the Israeli government should, well, assume a different, radically different stance vis-a-vis these events?
Well, I can't say what they're going to do. There's going to be some high-level talks on the Palestinian frontier with the Jordan in about a week. I guess it's been delayed 2 weeks. There are a number of issues that are out there, and I think the only thing we can say is it'll depend on how it shakes down, what position the Israelis take, and it could go from a continuation of the same to a heavily defended Gaza frontier.
Okay, to Gaza, to Adi, do you think, well, obviously you're in there amid the Palestinian people with all the hardship that they're suffering on a daily basis. Now, what is the feeling of the Palestinian side, given all that's happening throughout the broader Middle East region and among the other Arab nations? They're revolting, saying no to dictatorial regimes, who were, by the way, being supported by the U.S. generally and oftentimes by the Israeli government. What's the public opinion?
Well, obviously, many of the public were very happy to see these enormous friends of Israel and America finally brought down. They were dictatorships. They were brutal to their own people. And obviously, they were contributing towards the horrific siege and the bombings and the immunity that Israel has to commit all these crimes in against the people in Gaza. There's still uncertainty about what's going to happen, of course, because no one can be exactly sure wherever we are in the world. And so, you know, but ultimately, you know, so many I've spoken to have said, whatever is after Mubarak can't be a bigger friend of Israel after that. And the same is true to an extent for Ben Ali in Tunisia. And of course, we're keeping an eye on a lot of the other regimes as well. I think there was in some ways a bit of jealousy amongst Palestinians of seeing people get their freedom back. Palestinians have been waiting 60 years for liberty and for the same human rights as anybody else in the world. And they've only seen their situation worsen as the siege continues. So seeing so many people gaining back their rights and turning over the oppressive regime, they want to do that for Israel. And of course, it's not happening yet. But with a bit of luck and more Arab support and more international support, finally, this could happen. I think there could be a sign of light at the end of the tunnel.
To you in London. Now, when I was speaking earlier to a number of other experts, if not panelists on previous shows, regarding what's happening in Libya, in Tunisia, and Egypt, they were saying that one of the reasons that most people in these Arab nations, not necessarily Muslims, but indeed the majority are Muslims, have been enraged about the policies pursued by their rulers, who were, by the way, dictators supported by the U.S., was their, loose and weak stance before Israel and their possible positions towards the Palestinian cause and occupied territories. Now, given this, do you think the same scenario, which these revolutions were basically called liberation movements by many of these people, do you think such a scenario, such a liberation movement, could possibly realize in the occupied territories?
I mean, I think it's really important for us to remember that the greatest enemy for Israel is justice. And what Israel has been surrounding itself with for the last 62 years is with injustices, which she imposed or Israel imposed on the Palestinians by Israel itself, and the injustices imposed on the Arab nation who surround Palestine by their dictators and by their Western influence. And of course, these dictators are puppies, which were provided to the Arab world by their own, compressed into nothing. And what's happening for the last 40 odd years, that these Arab generation that we had around the region, they were taught on a daily basis how to look hopeless, how to be completely with no energy, how to not know what is their energy and what is their beauty and their good and powerful sides, and they were all taught that Palestine exists miles and thousands of miles away from you. So Palestine suddenly the closest country to them, being pictured using their own government's TV stations and policies as if it's something that happens out of our time zone. Now, with this liberation movement, the democracy movement, the revolution movement, you call them whatever you want, but basically it is, I think, what's the people in Egypt and certainly in Libya and across the Arab world are doing now. They are revolutionizing the revolution. And what they're doing now, they are realizing their strength, and they're realizing they're not hopeless people. They are people with a big history and big nation,
Osama,
and they've got
strength. What is really, in your opinion, the strength of this movement?
The strength of this movement, basically, that we are, I mean, Israel and everybody knows that what's happening in Palestine is injustice, and nobody, no crazy person will accept injustice driving on the doors.
The so-called liberation movements in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Libya, that caused people, motivated people to rise up against those dictatorial regimes. What is the strength of that movement, and could it be a possible inspiration to the people of Palestine?
Of course, no. The people of Palestine, are they going to get rid of their own dictators? And, you know, the Palestinian Authority, which is illegal for the last 10 years, will be thrown out. But unfortunately, in Palestine, we are going under a lot of challenges. You know, we have an internal conflict between Hamas and Fatah, which is completely, completely nonsense, and we must get rid of that conflict soon. We have the Palestinian Authority, which is completely an expired project of the Palestinian Liberation Movement, the BLO, a siege which is embarked upon the Palestinian people. So in Palestine, we can't do it on our own. We need help from the Arab people, the Arab brothers, and also from the Muslim world.
Let me throw your thoughts over to Ontario, to Mr. Corrigan, you were saying something. Go ahead.
I believe the Palestinians probably sparked some of this resistance because they've been standing steadfast against the occupation. They didn't buckle under the cruel Israeli attack in Gaza a couple years ago. Also, I think maybe the example of Hezbollah defeating the Israelis. So there's been a couple of sparks which have finally wakened the Arab populace, or the sleeping giant, as some people have described it. So I think that it is a game changer. And the collapse of the Tunisian regime, the collapse of the Egyptian regime, the refusal of Egyptian soldiers to fire on their own people, the fact that a lot of people are very worried about Saudi Arabia because it's probably the most unstable of all the regimes because of their rather bizarre succession system. And we're down, I think, to the last two sons of Ibn Saud, and they're probably looking at a civil war in Saudi Arabia in the very near future. But you're talking about people power, and this has shaken the Middle East, and certainly I think grabbed the attention of the West when the West says, we support democracy, but of course in many cases they don't. Hamas was elected democratically, but they didn't accept the results. There was a lot of complaints from the Western powers when democracy elected the wrong people from their perspective. But you have to allow the individual countries to decide who their leaders are. And I think you have to bring about the end of the humiliation of the Arabs, where they just sort of kowtow to the Americans, kowtow to the Israelis. And Israel, up until now, has not taken into account anything of the Arab states. It has launched its policies in total disregard to the Arab street. And now there's this frustration and this constant humiliation has been one of the forces building up against the corruption, against the autocratic regimes, against the feudal nature of the societies.
Humiliation to New York, to Thomas Lipscomb.
Very much.
You were saying something? Go
very
ahead.
Very much frustration.
Yes, I think it's important to realize that in Morocco, in Tunis, in Libya, in Egypt, in Bahrain, there hasn't been a single speaker or a sign that said anything about Palestine and Israel. If one country in the region needs to be afraid of this movement towards liberation, it's Iran. You have your two most popular leaders in house
Mr.
arrest,
Lipscomb,
and Rafsanjani
just
stepped
down. I know you really
down.
Do feel the urge
Iran
to take advantage of this opportunity. I appreciate that. It's very, intelligent of you. But since we don't have the luxury of excessive time to accord you, I'm afraid I have to stop you there. Please, why don't you stick with the topic? We're going to do definitely another show on the subject of your interest, and you'll be on the top of the list.
Was,
but right now we're discussing
was, the liberation
Israel
movement?
Versus the Arab nationhood.
Where
Iran, by the way, is not an
going,
Arab country.
Your question.
A reminder, so go ahead, please.
If you're going to shout me down, I'll just step off the set.
No, this is not shouting.
Because you asked a question.
I'm just preventing you from digressing from the
liberation movement?
Because we've gathered some people here to address the topic.
Let me go back to your question. Your question was, what is the impact of the liberation movement going on through these countries? I answered it. End of answer.
So the end of your answer is that Israel does not need to be fearful of what's happening simply because you have failed to see any placard bearing any slogan which denounces Israeli atrocities. Is that your justification? Because according to some Israeli senior and high-ranking Israeli officials, not necessarily military ones, this is something of great concern. So I was wondering whether or not you might have an analysis of this concern.
I did, and you misstated what I said. I said the Israelis and every
General
country in the region
yourself,
have
was
good
a concern
reason to be
the,
concerned.
The palace,
go ahead, New York. Finish your statement, please. Go ahead, quickly.
I said what I said, and you're quite correct. Israel has every reason to be concerned, and so does every other capital in the region.
And my simple question to you, sir, is why is Israel, or why should Israel be concerned?
They're not necessarily democratic movements. Some of those movements will go more towards a Sharia state than what Israel thinks of as democracy.
We're not discussing the end result, are we? We're discussing the process. The process seems to be fairly democratic by all international standards.
We don't know what movements are going on. There's been no analysis on which tribal breakdowns there are, which political parties have what level of prominence. We just have popular unrest. Popular unrest is anarchy. It is not democracy.
Okay, to Gaza, 280. Do you subscribe to this notion? And let's forget about Israel for the moment. Just a theoretical notion that these popular uprisings in Tunisia, in Egypt, and Libya, where all the world media are agreeing on the fact that these are the people democratically rising up to their dictators, being supported by the U.S., and this is even the American official stance, that this is a popular and a true people's movement. Do you subscribe to the notion put forward by New York that this is simply sheer anarchy?
No, not at all, because I've read an awful lot of the writings, and I've heard an awful lot of the leaders of the different groups involved, and it's a huge variety of groups, and it's a massive call for democracy. I mean, this is what has been so consistent throughout all of the local organisers, the smaller organisers. There has been many statements made, many many statements and proposals put forward for an intermediary way in which we can now choose the future administrations to organize and put in democratic structures.
This is actually we need to head into the break for a recap of the hour's top stories, but stay where you are. Welcome back to The Link here on Press TV with me, Zubin Zarvan. Second half, where we're discussing Israel versus the Arab Liberation Revolutions. Now, to London, to Osama, and then I'm going to go quickly to the people in Beirut. Very briefly, Osama, any comments you'd like to chip in? You heard what Gaza and New York were saying. Just go ahead.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's in no position to comment on people in the streets. I've been on Tahrir Square, I've slipped there, and actually what I've saw in my eyes is people for the first time in their life feeling that this is something that belongs to me. This is a relationship that I can't describe physically or mentally, and this is basically me making changes. I think these people have to be acknowledged, appreciated, and respected. And I think you have no right to call them, they are part of a sheer anarchy. And hang on a second. I mean, if people liberate themselves using arms, you call them terrorists. And if they liberate themselves using non-violent resistance, you call them anarchists. I mean, I don't know exactly this institutionalized way of thinking. Why do you have the arrogance of just trying to kind of identify what is a movement, what is a revolution? I think you have no right. People who actually been not acknowledged and not recognized for a long time are rising up and saying, hey, notice, we are here. We actually do exist. And we are the ones who are going to decide who are going to be our leader. And they have full freedom. And just and another comment, every single nation in the Arab world now, if you look at all the demonstrations, I mean, just let me remind you, along the side of the Tunisian flag, there is a Palestinian flag. Along the side of the Egyptian flag, there is a Palestinian flag. In Algeria, the same. In Libya, is the same. In Yemen, is the same. Palestine is uniting everybody. Now, what we have to understand, that this is not, of course, in the interest of the West people, who want us to be like sheep, to control our... I mean, there is an oil thrust, and you all want the oil. And that's exactly what the Arab people are realizing. Hang on a second. Is this what we deserve? Death and blood? No, we deserve better, and that's what we're going to show you in the streets. And this is what we call revolution. This is completely, by no means, a movement of anarchy. It is a movement of honor, and this is a movement that has to be respected, I think, saluted, because they actually make us feel as human, we are human, for the first time, for a long time.
Okay, let me go to Beirut. Anyone, some ladies were raising their hands. Ma'am, why don't you go ahead?
To begin with, you asked the question, is Israel fearful? And most definitely it is fearful. If not, it should be. Because what happened yesterday in Tunisia, what happened yesterday in Egypt, what is happening today in Bahrain, what is happening today in Libya, what will happen tomorrow in Saudi Arabia and Jordan is all changing the face of the Arab world, which will eventually change the way the Arab world is viewed in general. We are uniting. We are coming together. And yes, Israel has a lot to fear because of that.
Actually, I just like to say one more thing about Israel being fearful. Well, to be afraid of what's happening. Let me just go back a little bit to 2006 when Ms. Condoleezza Rice came to Lebanon when it was under attack by Israeli. She said that we are witnessing today the birth of a new Middle East. Well, I'm going to say today, we are witnessing today the new Middle East in our own way. And Israel definitely should be scared, because the new Middle East of the American way is definitely not going to happen anymore. This is our way of having a new Middle East happening, and Israel definitely has to be afraid if it's going to go and keep on killing people left and right. And not only that, you were saying that Israel is actually a democratic country. Well, excuse me. I mean, if we have people and rabbis asking for people, for Jewish people to actually kill babies and Palestinian and have them move away from Palestine, do you call this democratic? I'm sorry to say, it has nothing to do with democratic company. Country, it should look back to its own regime and try to change something about that, because otherwise definitely something is going to happen in Israel, and hopefully soon.
Before going to London and the gentleman raising his hands, I want to go to New York and Thomas Lipscomb. Do you have anything to say to the lady there that, well, clearly explained that this is indeed a liberation movement and quite far from anarchy, and the fact that, according to Condoleezza Rice, this is basically a manifestation of those birth pangs? And given this preface, do you think Israel, if not the U.S., together are really looking forward to the creation of this new kind of Middle East? Are they prepared enough?
Let's go back to the argument that you're all having with my statement about anarchy. Revolutions do not proceed by the posters that go up the first day of the revolution. Everybody claims they want democracy. France killed its king, had a French Revolution, what did they end up with? It took a couple of years. They got a reign of terror and they got an emperor. Russia had a revolution. They got rid of their czar. They had a huge democracy movement, well developed for a long period of time. What did they end up with? A totalitarian government. We never know exactly where revolutions are going to come out. We don't know who the parties are. We don't know who's on top. We don't know how it's going to come out, which means that since there's no democratic party of one kind, or even a large majority party of one kind in front in any one of these movements, we have no idea what's really going on, except there's a general desire for liberation from the more or less fascist totalitarian regimes that people have suffered under, which I applaud, but let's not decide it's a democratic movement. The Egyptians may very well decide they want a Sharia state under the Muslim Brotherhood. I don't consider that a democratic movement.
But would you be in a position to honor that, respect that, in all fairness, if that's what the
Sharia
people would finally end up choosing?
I believe the people should determine it.
And if the people would determine such a system of governance, would you be willing to respect that?
Of course, just as I would have respected a free election in Iran.
Okay, fair enough. And on that lack of information, if not ideas that you brought up, I want to go to Ontario, to Mr. Corrigan. Now, do you think this lack of information, if not perplexity on the part of the American administration and the Israeli side, might end up pushing them towards making some pretty bad decisions in foreign policy terms?
Well, certainly my friend in New York is right that this is an ongoing process and that we really don't know what the end game is. But I do want to point out that the Coptic Christians were strongly in favor of the removal of Mubarak. Omar Sharif, the most famous Arab Egyptian actor in the world, he made a statement in favor of the popular uprising. And in fact, the Coptic Christians and the Muslims in Egypt were working together. They guarded each other at each other's prayer time. So you can't say that this is the Muslim Brotherhood or the Sharia bogeyman, which is constantly raised up by some people in the West that want to polarize and sort of, I think, stigmatize the movements. But, you know, each country, I think, has its own factors. In Libya, Gaddafi stood up for, it was anti-imperialist, he was a nationalist, he was vocally in favor of the Palestinians. Most of the other regimes were not. So Gaddafi does have a base, and there's tribal differences between East and West, and the eastern part of Libya has never been very happy with Gaddafi, but Gaddafi seems to be on an offensive. They were taking land. He has certainly more support than Mubarak and a lot of the other regimes have. Certainly the feudal regimes in the Gulf, I think, are very worried about what is happening. But, you know, part of the problem is that these dictators and feudal regimes have destroyed the institutions of civil society, And the only mechanism that was allowed through to vent sort of any sort of popular displeasure or articulated political opinion was through the churches and the mosques. And as a result, I think we need to build up civil society in virtually all of the Arab countries, which is a key component to democracy. And right now, I think it is weak. And it's possible that the army regime will seize power and hold power
civil
in Egypt.
Societies,
they have, in fact, tightened the restrictions on the Gaza border, for example.
Need to be emerging throughout the region in these countries. And this has been stated as the official will of the people in those countries. The people in London, do you think that these civil societies rising out of the ashes following these revolutions would be necessarily sympathetic to Israeli stances in the region? Or there is a possibility that they may just end up being unfavorable towards Israel?
Hi, I have a question for the guests from overseas. We know that the power, the Israeli power in the area, depend above all by the protection of USA. And I would like to know nowadays how is the status, the condition of this partnership, this alliance.
And you were addressing this question exactly to whom? Anyone in particular?
To the guest from New York and
okay,
from
let's go
Ontario
to
also.
New York to Thomas Lipscomb. Go ahead.
There's a long-standing agreement between the United States and Israel. There's a lot of dissent here in this country right now. Increasingly numbers of people are questioning how much in the interest of the United States and the United States' ambitions in the Mideast area this obligation is. I would say it's probably at its shakiest point than it's been in many, many years. And the current liberation struggle going on throughout the Middle East in various countries is dramatizing it even further. So you're asking a good question at a good time. Just take it from me that more questioning is going on now. Mr. Corrigan may agree in Canada as well than we've had in my lifetime.
Okay, to the people in Beirut. Go ahead, quickly.
Any freedom of expression or any system, democratic nonetheless, any revolution, anything, will put back the real choice of the people of this country that they don't want Israel in this region.
To you, sir, in Beirut, before you answer, go ahead. It was argued that the thread unifying all these nations, Arab nations, by the way, in their liberation revolutions in the past couple of weeks have been partly religious, Islam, and the culture that arises from that. But why is it, I'm addressing you guys in Beirut and targeting the issue of the Palestinian authority as well as Hamas, why is it that the Palestinian people, after all these years of suffering and hardship, have not been able to unify their stances against Israel? Is it not about time they did that? Adi, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the problem for Palestinians is that with Oslo, they got roped into a virtual apartheid situation by following the Oslo agreement. Sadly, Israel has just taken advantage and ethnically cleansed so many more Palestinians, settled the entire West Bank, made the situation in Gaza a whole lot more unbearable, and obviously made this huge divide between Gaza and the West Bank. And I think that it's about time that they started to think clearly about what is resistance, what is not a culture of defeatism, what is resistance, and that would mean abolishing the PA, for example. That is just a remnant of Oslo, and it's now time for unity, obviously, but unity with justice, with a view on justice, and not about any two-state solution that leads to Bantustans all over the Palestine. It's got to be a real serious freedom for the people here, and I would recommend for that one democratic state, as many other Palestinians are recommending. And that needs to be a focus point, not on looking to just get partial freedom, partial justice,
okay,
partial
fair
rights.
Enough. Let me go
They're human beings
to,
like
to
any
New
other.
New York and Thomas Lipscomb, and then I'm going to go to Ontario, Mr. Kerrigan. Now, New York, Thomas, do you envisage the creation of a new Middle East on the horizon? And if so, if you buy into that argument, which was, by the way, hinted by Condoleezza Rice 2 years ago, where do you think the U.S. as well as Israel and their alliance with some of these Arab nations really fits in?
I have no idea, because I have no idea what regimes are going to come out of this. I'm perfectly open. I hope it leads to better solidarity between other Middle Eastern nations and as they're reconstituted in the United States. That would be a marvelous thing to have happen. But I haven't any idea, and neither does anyone else. So I don't think speculating about that is informative. What I would want to say is I think Palestine's hope in future, as the gentleman said, will be a unitary state with justice. I'm all for it. We have to look at the United States maneuvering a wonderful deal which Arafat turned down, which was incredibly stupid. Then America pressured the Israelis to get out of Gaza. Hamas moved in and turned it into a desert. Palestinians need to pull together in a unitary state. I don't care if Fatah runs it, Hamas runs it, or someone else the people want. Until you have one negotiating point and one group empowered, nothing much is going to happen, because then Israel can get around anything you do.
And Thomas, are you asserting that you don't really care if it's Hamas or Fatah, if there is another democratic, a fully democratic election, and the people get to choose the likes of Hamas, which they did back in 2006, you, among other Americans, would not deny them the right of that choice or selection?
Not at all. I'm willing for the Muslim Brotherhood to take over Egypt and Hamas to take. That's up to the people to choose.
That's your statement. To Ontario, Mr. Kerrigan. Now, if such a prognosis were to materialize, which New York alluded to, which type of government do you think would then be desirable to the U.S. in order to ally itself with, if not align its foreign policy measures?
See, the United States has a great history. They rebelled against a king. They felt that, you know, no representation, taxation, no representation. But they sort of lost their mission. They once were a democratic beacon, but now they've turned into a state that is propping up some of the most corrupt, brutal regimes in the world, which are also weak and unstable. In Iran, for example, they perceive the Shah as the man of the year. Next 6 months later, he's kicked out because they simply ignored the issues in the street and the key issues that were of real concern to the Iranian people. But I want to go back to my friend in New York, Mr. Lipset. Whenever the speaker from Gaza said a single unitary state, that means one state for all of Palestine where Jews, Christians, and Muslims would have equality. And then I think you switched your argument where you're referring to a two-state solution. You know, we may have to go to a two-state solution where Gaza and the West Bank and East Jerusalem are unified in a Palestinian state. But the long term, you know, the march of history is that people are equal, that you cannot set up a state that is, you know, either theocratically gives benefits to one group of people and discriminates against the other, or based on race. And I think for Israel to integrate itself in the Middle East, it has to recognize equality. It has to, acknowledge the expulsion of nearly a million Palestinians in 1948 and more Palestinians in 1967, has to compensate the Palestinians for their losses. They owned the titles to the property, but it was stolen from them. And, you know, I think Israel will be welcome as long as it is a democratic state and it recognizes or at least tries to achieve equal rights for all people, if they're Christian, Muslim, Jewish, or of some other religion. So, you know, we can't have an ethnocratic state in the heart of the Middle East that advances, you know, Jewish supremacy and Jewish law, which is, I think, is very problematic, especially when you consider that it affects the rights of minorities, the Christian Palestinian population, the Muslim Palestinian population, which in fact make up over 25% of Israel's population proper, but probably it's a 50-50 split when you look at the entire area of Palestine. And then, of course, there's the whole issue of the Palestinian refugees in the camps. You know, they have to either be allowed to return home, which is all international law and all concepts of justice would necessitate, or they have to be given compensation, or perhaps some of them, you know, could be taken to Canada, the United States, other countries. There is a way, but we need to have the will to address these problems. And everybody keeps talking about justice. I think justice is the foundation that this whole process has to be built upon, whether it's democracy in the various Arab countries, whether it's democracy in Gaza or the West Bank, or democracy in Israel. And, you know, justice is the foundation. But also, I think all of the Arab countries have to develop the concept of what is called the loyal opposition. So if the king steps down or they go to a constitutional monarchy, that's fine, or you have an election where, you know, Mubarak or whoever loses, and then they can still be respected as an elder statesman, but you cannot just have a ruler for life and have like the Mukhtar of the country and have then try to install your son into
Kerrigan,
power afterwards. Okay,
sorry,
this
Ms. Kerrigan,
is a crazy system that's unstable.
Of course,
the population will never accept that.
Put them across to the people in Beirut. But before that, there seems to be a gap in our arguments across the board and panel when it comes to collating and comparing these liberation movements taking place throughout the Middle East region and North Africa with that of which could potentially materialize in the occupied territories. And that's the very fact that in Egypt, the people were against the dictatorship of Mubarak being supported by the U.S. and being allied with the Israeli side. But then again, the country was deemed as being sovereign, a state of its own. The people were not occupied. But in the occupied territories, there is no sovereignty, not even a type of suzerainty. The people have been kicked out of their homeland, and they've been just given a tiny piece of land for the sake of international consumption. But based on that reality, that there is a gap here, and I'd like you to fill that with your commentary, I want to go to Beirut and to the gentleman, then to the lady raising her hand. Go ahead.
What I want to, when we discuss the situation here in the region, in the Middle East, we're not discussing the Palestinians against the Israelis, and that's it. I mean, when the West, the whole West backs up Israel, I mean, how much does it cost the West to put their own military warships? It will cost much more than the billions that the United States of America is paying for Israel. So they need a state to stabilize the region here. That's why they created Israel from the beginning. Israel is a Western company or a Western backed up company that's being used just like Blackwater. This is the same. Every state have an army except for Israel. Israel, it's an army that have a state. This is to get back to the main problem. It's a problem between nation of the Muslim nations against the Western nations. What we need to know is today, what's happening today. I mean, I have to agree with the gentleman in New York. Yes, it's just the beginning. Revolution starts, and no one knows what's going to end. And I mean, what no one knows going to end. But here in this region, the identity of the region is Islamic. Whether the West like it or not, it is Islamic. So the Islam itself has its own regime. The West will refuse it, for sure. And they will try their most not the Islamists come to take control of the region. But till when? This is the question. Till when?
Let me go to the lady in Beirut.
The region is Islam.
Among the audience, lady, yeah. Very briefly, yes. 30 seconds max.
Yes. What I would like to say is I didn't really like the sarcasm in the gentleman in New York when you were asking him about if he respects the election, and he said definitely, like, I respect the election in Iran. Of course, I mean, let's face it, when Hamas won the election, you called it as a terrorist a group, and you didn't want to have anything to do with it. And the same thing goes for Iran. And you keep on mentioning Iran for some odd reason. But anyway, this is not our topic, but one thing for sure is anything that it's against Israel, you always connect it to Islamophobia for some reason. Now you're talking about the Islamic Brotherhood and how you're going to respect if they're going to take power. Well, I'll tell you the truth, they're not going to, I don't think they're going to take power, but even if they do, in the future, if they have any say about going against Israel, you're definitely going to be against them. So let's face it, I mean, and I said it before and I say it again, I mean, the only concern for you guys is Israel. And I mean, you guys are spending so much money, billions of dollars every year to support its existence. But like I said, you know, things are not the same anymore. And you have to read everything that you used to be dealing with the Middle East, because we're not the same anymore. Thank you.
Okay, that's it. All the time we had for this edition of The Link here on Press TV. A big thank you to the panel and the people joining us. As always, to you for watching us. Do make sure you can join us again. Until then, let's take care.